Hello and welcome to Adoptee Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. In this new strand for the podcast, we want to create a space where adoptees can share their stories as well as their views on adoption, both past and present. In this episode, Barry shares his story of being adopted with his brother in the 1960s, their complicated and difficult journey and the impact of that through his life. Barry is open and honest in relation to the challenges he faced and the impact on him as a child and an adult. As always, we advise caution if you've experienced adoption, as this may be upsetting. I'm sure you'll find it interesting, and if you're an adoptee and would like to share your perspectives or experience, then please do direct messages at the Twitter feed or on our Facebook page.
Oh, hi, I'm Barry Mays. I'm 61 years old. I was adopted when I was nearly five. What do you want to ask me? What do you want to know?
It's your story, really, and I guess this we met, and just as we were talking about our families, it kind of became clear that we had this connection about I'm an adopter, you're an adoptee.
Yeah.
So tell me. I found your story amazing, and I came away with so many questions about lots of things, not about you, but about the bigger things. So tell me, what is your story as you as an adoptee?
Hopefully I there aren't any gaps. So oddly enough, I was born down the road in Edmonton in 1957. There was myself, my brother, who's 2 years older than me, and my sister, who's 7 years older than me. We have same mum, but we have different dads. So I think the story is that my mum was in a relationship. My birth mum was in a relationship, had a daughter. Then another man came along who was my father and my brother's father. He disappeared, went off the scene. So you have to imagine back in the early 1960s, there's a mum with three children. Two of them are illegitimate. And she had no money, had no job. And her brothers, my mum's brothers, persuaded her that she ought to put up the two boys for adoption, and that would be the best thing because it would help her financially and it would remove this stigma from the family. So that apparently is the story. So my sister came home one day and my brother and I were gone, and we were put up for trial adoption. I think we were fostered for a little while, then we were put up for trial adoption in Bradford, with a middle-class family, GP, we had an au pair. I can remember them. There was Anthony, there was Louise, there was Carol, the au pair. I've got a very strong photographic memory. I can remember these people. I can remember what I got for Christmas and all sorts of things. But it turned out that my brother and I, Paul, my brother and I, we were boisterous, and the family in Bradford decided that they wouldn't be able to cope. So they gave us up, and then we were put up for trial adoption again with a family in South London, in Mitcham. And yet again, we were quite boisterous. The story goes that our dad, who eventually adopted us, the dad said to my mum, "Look, I know you're having trouble with these boys. I know they've got a lot of energy and anger, but if we don't adopt them, they're going to go to a children's home, which probably is not best, so we ought to adopt them." So I was adopted at age nearly five, my brother nearly seven, and I knew what was happening, didn't know why it was happening, and I somehow didn't accept these new parents. In fact, I remember the first night that I arrived, they went to undress me and put me in my pajamas, and I said, "I can undress myself, thank you." I just didn't want anyone to touch me. I didn't want to get to know them. And as a child, I didn't want anyone to touch me. I can remember that quite strongly. My parents used to mock me. "Don't touch me, don't touch me." I didn't want love. I didn't want affection. Although in reality, I guess I did want love and affection. But there was something psychologically going on to do with rejection. If adults reject me, it's probably not worth getting to know them. Of course, you don't understand that as a child. I didn't like the word family, and I didn't like the word love. And these words didn't ever appear in my relationship when I was young. It's very odd. So I grew up with my brother, and all I can really remember as a child growing up is constantly worrying, where is my sister, where is my sister? And I'd often go in my bedroom and cry, you know, where is my sister, Carol? And the irony is I used to think, well, she's probably got it good. She's probably married, 2.2 children, Ford Escort, nice semi-detached house in Woking. You know, it's the vision that it goes on in your head. And of course you build it up and you build it up. I did suffer depression as a child, looking back. I have suffered depression as an adult, all to do with this inability to process things, which is the only way I can summarize it. Because as an adult who's now traveled this journey, I can now process things differently. But at the time, I was just full of anger. I was very angry as a child. I was quite violent as a child. Used to smash things up, or smash my brother's face. We used to get into fights. Mm. I was difficult to control, and therefore my parents were disciplinarians, so that just went round in circles. I'd get more angry, they'd get more violent. Parenting was probably a bit different in those days. Every time I'd be in tears and saying, I hate you, and my parents would say, oh, is it because you miss your mum? And I'd say, no, it's not because I miss my mum. It's because I miss my sister. And to this day, my adopted parents have not been able to grasp that. I think there's this natural presumption that adopted children will miss their mother or their parents. Mm. I confess I didn't miss my mother, but I have a memory of my sister. Strong memories, and I must have had some kind of emotional bond, because I just missed my sister terribly. And the only memory I have of my mother is my birth father kicking her down the stairs, and that did traumatize me. And even into adulthood, this memory, having received counseling, it turns out that when I'm in sticky situations, perhaps in a workplace, having robust discussions, I adopt this fight or flight response. I'm either confrontational or I just crumble and can't seem to defend or justify myself. And apparently it's all to do with this feeling of this two little boys at the bottom of the stairs crying, seeing their mum kick down the stairs. And so I've had to detach that memory from how I might be feeling at the time, and it's taken many years of practice just to detach it and handle things like any other adult might handle things. What was going through my mind? I think I had in my head growing up that I was rejected, that I'd been rejected, and why would I be rejected? I think I had it in my head, well, I must have been a bad boy. If you link that to my dad being a disciplinarian, you know, whacking me around the ear, well, I thought, well, I must be a bad boy because he's always telling me off. And so you take on this persona of you must be a bad boy. And therefore, as a child, a school child, I'd be trying to prove that I was normal or capable or even bright. I probably had it in my head that I was super bright. Anything to gain attention. I used to self-harm, not in a big way, but I used to cut myself and stuff, and just so people could say, oh, what have you done to your arm? So when you look back, there's a pattern of trying to get attention. When I grew to adulthood in the workplace, it changed to affirmation. I'll be seeking affirmation. You know, well done, Barry, that was a good project or a good bit of work. And of course, it was never enough, so you seek more. I used to seek more responsibility, you know, apply for jobs that were probably way above my station or above my ability, but I just had this inbuilt desire to prove. What I was trying to prove, I've no idea, but it's some kind of behavior that I had grown because of all these funny mixed feelings. should say a bit more about hate. I had misdirected my emotions towards my adopted parents. So I guess, as many adopted children, you want to blame someone for the situation you're in, because I was unhappy. Someone's got to be responsible. So I blamed the very people who saved me. I blamed my adopted parents. It's your fault that I'm miserable. It's your fault that I'm unhappy. And I hated them. I hated them with such vengeance. I used to plot to kill them. And this would occupy my mind quite a bit. You know, after school, I would just go and sit at the end of the field, and I would just hatch plots of how to kill them. And of course, I had to both go at the same time. Otherwise, one would be left. And I just used to occupy all my time thinking about it, thinking what they might be worth. You know, how many thousands of pounds could I get? What would I do with the money? And where would I run away to? Perhaps I'd go to Brighton. Perhaps I'd go to France. You know, I would just occupy me the whole time. And then the other thing that occupied me was getting in touch with my sister. So I did chat to my adopted parents several times about meeting up. And of course, my parents said, they thought it was about meeting up with my mother. And I had to keep saying, no, no, it's about my sister. But I never did quite understand it. And so it was brushed under the carpet. And I would be advised, well, how would your mum feel about that if you suddenly popped up in her life? You know, she's probably forgotten all about you, or tried to forget all about you. And that's a very odd thing to say, because they're trying to pose logical arguments, but of course that puts guilt in my head, or a sense of despair of, oh, it's dead end, don't bother. But again, as a child, you can't process all these things. So I gave up thinking about it. But it does nag away at the back of your mind. A couple of other things worth mentioning. In relationships with women, I was quite controlling, dominant.
What age is this?
Well, I'm not. There's a few weird things in between. So at 15, I lost my virginity to an older woman who was probably a mother replacement. Most of my early girlfriends were older than me. If you think back, my sister was 7 years older than me. Many years later, I received counselling, and it turns out I was seeking sister replacements in my relationship. And when I did get into serious relationships, you know, where you buy a house together, marry, I loved being with my partner, with my wife, but I didn't want intimacy. And with professional help, I realized that these were sister replacements, and you wouldn't make love to your sister. And when someone said that to me, you think, you know, the stone dropped, and then you realize, yeah, you know, psychologically, there's patterns, and you don't quite realize why we do the things we do, why we choose the partners we do, why we seek arguments, why we seek fights. You know, it's all bound up with childhood experiences, and that shocked me. And I did have a nervous breakdown and a breakup of a marriage. So now I'm happily married.
Right. But was that because of that sort of revelation of what you were replacing when that clicked?
I think it was it was the, someone has just opened this box, like the secret had come out of, Barry, this is why you seek older women, this is why after a while you have trouble with intimacy, and it's all because you're seeking your sister or a replacement. And I just couldn't undo it. Once all the worms were out of that can, I just couldn't get them back in, and I had some kind of meltdown and breakdown. I lost my job. My marriage broke up. I went into a cave. My friends didn't know what was happening to me. I didn't know what was happening to me. I was in deep depression. I did try to take my life. Ended up in ITU. Some of my friends were Christians, and I just scoffed them. I just thought, you know, there can't be a God allowing all this rubbish to happen. You know, everything just seemed to get worse. There are some good howevers. And of course, after a while, you realize that this is just getting worse or different. You think it's getting better, it's just different. Now, some of your listeners might not get this, but when I reached the end of my tether again, I thought, well, I can't take my life. I can't try that again. This is pointless. And so I got on my knees and I prayed to this God that I didn't believe in. And I said, you know, if there is a God, just help me. And God spoke to me these five words. And the five words were, don't make people feel guilty. And he said, don't. He didn't say, do not. Don't make people feel guilty. And it dawned on me that I was a bully. I was dominant. I was abusive. And it was always someone else's fault and someone else's fault. And they had to be sorry. And these five words, don't make people feel guilty. This was an amazing revelation of how I was responsible for my behavior, how I was responsible for the way people were relating to me. And this amazing feeling of peace came over me. Again, if someone's listening is not a Christian, they won't get it. If you are a Christian, you will get it. This peace came over me and I just got into bed and I just felt so much better. And from that moment, I was able to rethink who I was, where I am, my roots, and I just looked at it all from a different reference point. And that, from that point, everything changed. I mean, there are some other things I can share in a minute along the way about my sister and stuff, but let me tell you how becoming a Christian reframes things. So if I think about what my adopted parents said, that if they didn't adopt me, I would have gone into a children's home. That seemed a bit nasty at the time they said it. I thought, that's not really caring. But when you sit back and realize from their perspective, if they hadn't adopted these two boys, they would have gone into a care home. So let's adopt them and give them the best we can as new parents. We've got a home, we've got a garden, we got mates in the streets. And when you think of the sacrifice that my adopted parents gave for these two awkward boys, and my parents did the best they could. There was no parental training. There was no one ready to guide them. And then me selfishly thought, they're not good enough parents. But when I think of what they gave, it just makes me realize what an idiot I was to hate them and to judge them in that way. And I've had to build up a relationship now with my parents who adopted me, and I have said sorry to them for the abuse I gave them. And we have great time together. Every fortnight I meet my dad, we go to the Greasy Spoon, we chat about all sorts of things, and we move on. We've moved on from it, but it took a lot of work on my part to make up the hatred that I had caused, ironically. So that's one aspect I've learned. And then I think of my birth mother having to give up two children. So as a child, I think, how could you give me up? What a selfish thing to do. What a heartless thing to do. But when you think of the culture at the time, my mum's situation, we don't know what she was feeling. We don't know what she was going through. We don't know the pressure she was under from her relatives. I would probably do the same. How do we know what we would do? But I'd probably do the same, given the circumstances. So again, I've learned not to judge my mother, not to blame my mother. And then you think of the loss that my birth mother must have encountered to give up two boys that she's carried in her womb, given birth to, and then being persuaded to give them up. Now I can tell you, because I have since met up with my sister, so I can now help fill in the gaps. So if we wind the clock forward a bit, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So about 20 years ago, so in my 40s, I made a concerted effort trace my sister, Carol. And I went with a mate of mine. We went to Somerset House and we ploughed through all these documents and files and books looking through birth certificates, marriage certificates, and I just failed. Spent hours and hours, failed. But it meant I could close that chapter, and that was a big thing I could just let go of and think, well, at least I tried.
Mm.
It didn't stop me thinking about my sister, but it meant I could get over this hurdle or this barrier that was preventing me from moving on. That was about 20 years ago. 10 years ago, so that was 10 years after I tried, I got this weird letter through the post, handwritten letter with a stamp on it. It was a strange letter about, are you Barry Mays? Is your brother Paul Mays? Were you adopted? Did you have a sister? You know, we are an adoption agency. Da, da, da. I can't remember exactly what was in a letter, but you know, if so, get in touch. And I broke down when I read this letter because I just knew it's the adoption agency. It's my sister trying to get hold of me. And I remember breaking down and hyperventilating. I was in such a state. Was it joy? Was it relief? I can't remember, but I just remember being in a complete state. So I phoned the agency and they said, come in for a meeting. Sure enough, it was my sister Carol who had gone through the adoption agency to ask to trace me, which they had. They had also sent the same letter to my brother. I phoned up my brother. And what's going on? So he said, let's go together to the agency. By the way, it's worth saying my brother suffered in a different way to me. We've never talked about it, but I know he's suffered. I don't know what his feelings are, but I know he's had a different journey. So we met, we went to see the adoption agency, and we said, yeah, let's all meet up. Let's meet my sister. And I told the adoption agency, you know, what about my thoughts about my sister. And she must have had a great life, 2.2 kids, and then Ford Escort, and semi-detached house, and permed hair, you know. And the adoption agent said, Barry, I think you, as life goes on, your memory builds up and it gets more colourful, and in the end you put your sister on a pedestal. She said, I think you might be surprised when you meet your sister. She said, it's not for me to tell you, but she said, just be prepared for the story to be different to the one that you've got in your head. And that's all she told me. So we met my sister. Oh no, first of all, before meeting my sister, the agency said, look, our advice is that you write a letter to each other. Write letters, then include a photo, tell them what you're doing. If you've missed her, tell her you miss her. So we wrote these letters. And my sister and I had so much in common. We both played badminton, we both liked dancing, we both liked traveling. She had lived in Spain, she lived in South America, she'd got married, this had happened, that happened. So we got to know a little bit about each other before we met, and then we met. And of course, when we met, I've forgotten that, you know, years have passed. And so this young girl, 12 or 13, was now in her 60s. And that was a bit of a shock. Even though as an intelligent adult, you should be able to process it. It just shows how you hang on to this vivid image. And then we spent months, years getting to know each other. So I need to share with your listeners a bit about this. So if you recall what I've said about how I've had a tough life, because I'm the one who's been adopted, I'm the one who's been rejected, and my sister must be having a great time.
Mm.
Well, I have to tell you, the story was completely different, and I'm ashamed of what I now have to share. So this I know from my sister chatting to me. And we see each other regularly. I saw her last weekend, in fact. So it turns out that when she came home from school, age 12, she comes home and says, Mum, where's Paul? Where's Barry? Where are the boys? And Mum says, oh, well, they've just gone away for a few days. A few days pass, and then Mum says, well, they've gone away for a few weeks. Obviously, I'm cutting this short and I haven't got the exact words, but you get the hang of it. And then, because after a while, my sister realises that we're not coming back and she's been lied to. Imagine your mother lying to you about your brothers. And so that created stress. My sister tells me that she became very angry, very aggressive. Whenever mum was out, she'd be having parties, because remember, she's a teenager. And she would rip up floorboards, smash windows, set fire. And she became an overnight delinquent, uncontrollable. And it was to do with anger, guilt. She blames herself for her two brothers going away. I don't think anyone blamed her, but she blamed herself. So there I was thinking, I'm the miserable one who's been taken away. My sister was put in a care home because mother couldn't cope with her. She was put in a care home and never came out until she was an adult. And when I heard this, you can imagine the, not just the sorrow of hearing her story, because we all have a story, but the shame that I felt for me feeling these selfish feelings, and the shame, and it wasn't guilt, because I wasn't guilty, but the shame I felt when she told me of her experience and then how she had to live her life from a care home. So we're talking about reframing things. Boy, did that reframe my life. Oh my goodness, my life's a picnic compared to what my sister has gone through. So it's made me think often that people who are adopted, they have a story to tell, and we need them to tell their story. We need to listen to their story. We need to try and understand their feelings, and we need to empathize. But everyone has a story. The mother who gives up the children, we don't know what it's like. The siblings that might get left behind. We might think we know what's happening, but from my perspective and my story, I clearly got that wrong. So I think we often, it suits us to invent a story of what might be happening to our sibling, but actually we don't always know, and we mustn't judge them. This is what I've learned. We mustn't judge them. We don't know what we would do in their circumstances. Grief, I mentioned grief. So I had grief in terms of loss, and the loss of my sister, the loss of mother, didn't know my father, that kind of thing. So it's sort of loss. And it also affected me as a young adult. I knew I didn't want to have children. I wasn't good when children were around me. I couldn't play with them, wasn't interested, couldn't relate to children. Didn't want children. And in my first relationship, my girlfriend, who I was with for many years, she became pregnant, and I persuaded her to have a termination. And I was very dominant and sure that she had to have a termination, which again is very selfish of me, because she wanted to have the baby, she wanted to be a mother. And I said, no, but I'd make a terrible parent. I'm not ready. So she had a termination, and then I'm the one who then became ill, and I became, again, the confrontational, domineering. Something weird happened to me, and I clearly was not coping well with the decision I made, and I used to have nightmares about this baby that I had lost, that I had killed. So I had trouble dealing with that, and again I had a nervous breakdown around that as well. So that was another nervous breakdown. That was before the breakdown with my marriage. This all gets wearing after a while, these breakdowns. It is tiring and exhausting. But it's good news. As I say, I'm through it, I'm the other side, and I now have a relationship with my sister. I'm married to a younger woman, I should say. I'm married, she's not a sister replacement, I'm very confident about that. I say that because it's just an interesting thing. I have two children, Molly, Matthew. I cannot pretend I'm a good parent. I have definitely inherited some demons and ghosts to do with, you know, my own upbringing, and I'm working on that all the time. I cannot pretend I'm a good parent. I love my children. I don't always like what they do. I love my wife, my sisters in my life. And every day I count my blessings of how lucky I am. And I'm ashamed when I think of all the hatred and stuff that went on, all these wasted years of hatred, revenge, torture, plotting, just generally not being a nice person. I sit here calmly now, but I was a very different person to the one I am now. So I'm still on a journey. My journey really is about not judging people. That's my story.